Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
Politics on so many different levels. I say hello to those people out there who've been listening, faithful listeners, people in Minneapolis, people in our followers in St. Louis. So again, I'd like to say hello to you. We bring you greetings. Thank you. The DC Poetry Project, we're attempting to do some new and different kinds of things, as we always try to do, new and different kind of things. We'd like to welcome into our family a new organization, the DMV Poetry and People Meetup Group, a group of about 250 strong poets in the DMV. That's D.C., Virginia, and Maryland, or D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. So again, I'd like to welcome them to be a part of the D.C. Poetry Project family. So I'd like to say hello to them. We have a caller on the line, one of our faithful callers. I'd like to bring him in, and we'll continue this journey. Hold on. This is the Power of Poetics. The calling number is 646-716-8754. And again, we're just going to have a nice, intimate journey tonight as we talk about poetry, as we do every week. It's an opportunity to share, to grow, to listen, to learn, to just be. Hold on 1 second. Good evening, Gary. Are you there?
Yeah, man. What's up, man? You're acting funny.
Hey. What'd you say?
I said, you're acting funny on me. You didn't let me know y'all was on, and I can't find you on Blog Talk or what? I mean, what? What's up with that?
Well, we can talk about it off the air. But how are you tonight, my friend? How are you tonight? You're not going to raise my blood pressure. How are you tonight, bud? You doing okay?
I'm good. I mean, that wasn't intended to raise your blood pressure. I'm sorry. It was a little light humor, but no, I'm serious. I didn't see your show. I'm on Blog Talk, and it was 7 o'clock, and I didn't see it
pop up in the thing. I was just...
Oh, okay, that's not a problem because I set it up earlier today and I see now that I have it in the category called entertainment by mistake. So, again, thank you for that. So that people may not find it. It might just be you and I. And, again, I was... Did you ever see that movie? It's made in 1980 called Say Amen, Somebody. Did you ever see that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, it was a documentary about the life of Thomas Dorsey, you know, the African-American man who wrote so many gospel hits such as, what did he write, Peace Be Still?
Precious Lord, Take My Hand.
That's the one. James Cleveland, Peace Be Still. Right, so there was just a scene in the movie where these two elderly ladies, they were discussing something that had taken place in 1936. One said it took place in 1936. The other said, no, it took place in 1934. So they went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so one, at the end, this one lady said, now you're not going to raise my blood pressure because I knew it took place in 1936. So that's what I meant by that in terms of the blood pressure thing. So it was nothing personal, just a little Michael Anthony Ingram humor. So what's happening in Alabama?
Everything good.
Everything's good?
Yeah, everything's good. We're
good. I'm glad you are. That's so important, you know. I think something is going on around the country and people falling ill, colds and chills, all kinds of things. So it's that time of the season. You have any poetry for us tonight, my friend?
Yeah, I'll share this piece.
All right, great.
It's called A Hot Mess. And it's a little bit different than what I normally do, but
okay.
We'll do it anyway.
All right. All right.
Okay, here I go. Talking to her in the meat section at the local market. She said to satisfy her is to put in work. So I slipped slowly in her love zone with a hat on, the heart on, I had for her. Man, honey, dude was hot. Hotter than a habanero and jalapeno pepper. Her cool demeanor warmed up the room like sunshine emitting sun rays from her affectionate smile. Honey, Serafina was her name, which was Hebrew for burning flame. And this Puerto Rican beauty indeed was a sweet fire. Honey can light my load by lighting my wood any time that she desire. See, our personality match well enough to spark a romantic flame. I told her, I said, babe, I'm a fireman because I love playing with fire. And Miss Burning Flame, the hotter, the better. She smiled. She said she was an arsonist because she stayed on fire, hot, and liked to watch men's heart burn with pure passion for her. And the hotter they got, the wetter she got. I got a lawn, and I touched her arm. I said, baby girl, you about to set off my alarm. I smell a fire alarm, a five alarm fire brewing. Come on over to my place so I can get you flaming hot and then put you out. And if need be, I'll be ready to rescue your pretty little cat if it gets sprung. I'm stuck climbing up this tall tree. Bring that fat rump roast you carrying over to my place so I can season and marinate that thing and then we can fire up the grill. And while it's waiting on the charcoals to ash over, we can have mixed drinks, wine, cold beer, whatever, and just chill. Later, I kissed her glossy red lips, and immediately my swordfish was hooked as I unhooked her bra. I said, honey, you are truly blessed the way your cup's running over. She said, boy, you are such a mess. The eye cross exposed 10 lines when we laid down and I took her panties off. It was hotter than a winter fireplace between her moist, steamy thighs that resembled two honey-coated logs roasting a pink honey-coated glazed ham over an open fire. Woo-hoo-wee, most deaf, Miss Fat Booty. I mean, her booty was fatter than a Boston butt, which I rubbed down in baby oil And then I began to season certain sensitive spots with the tip of my tongue. I was pretty much speechless when she said, "Well, I hope a cat catch your tongue." And Seraphina was a blazing inferno, and she earned this. And since it was the weekend, I wanted her to feel my face turn her 50 shades of gray. Teasing and tasting her mushy marshmallow treat, Seraphina burning flames was so wet. I mean, her flames were so wet, she could set fire to rain. Then I began to finger her G-spot until love juices flow like wet lava from her volcanic hot spot. And just as Mount Honey Seraphina was about to erupt, I put a rubber shield on my main man, and I slowly entered inside her shade, the fiery furnace, and I dug deeper and deeper and deeper until I felt our temperature rise. And like a black phoenix, I rose up, and I put her legs up, stood on my toes, and I pound and I pound and I pound her grade A rosy ground beef. And she started squirting and skeeting, causing me to release my trained semen to help put out her orgasmic fire. But no. It only made matters pleasurably worse, because she was coming and coming and coming back to her senses. She screamed, "Don't stop, boy." And then she flipped me over and she started grinding harder and harder. And she rolled and rolled and started grinding and harder, harder, bucked and jerked until we were both out of breath. That was intense, Honey Seraphina. I said, "You got that fire loving, hotter than hot grease frying fish in a cast iron skillet." Wet and well satisfied, we lay simmering in a bed of smoldering sexual bliss. And after a few long minutes, she said, "I hope you're ready for round two." Then she asked if she could taste my smoked Polish sausage. Just then, we both smelled smoke, rushed out to the patio, and I saw that a chair was on fire, started by some amber ashes that the wind blew from the grill. I mean, we hurriedly put out the fire, and then we both looked at that rump roast burnt to a black crisp. Smiling, we held hands as we discovered that we had made a hot mess out of what was supposed to be a romantic dinner. That's it.
All right. And what was the title of that?
A Hot Mess.
A Hot Mess. Man, when did you start working on that one?
I wrote it October 6, 2015, about a couple, not long ago. Matter of fact, I wrote it to us a prompt for another show.
Okay.
It's a sensual erotic show they do, and I wanted to write something new, because I didn't want to keep sharing the same old pieces over and over, so I wrote that. And then the honey part came in. It was off another show that they asked to write a prompt with the word honey. Use it any kind of way you want it. So at the time, I was in the process of writing this for that show, and then when I saw that prompt for that, I said, "Oh, okay, I can knock out two birds with one stone." So I already had a name for the woman, Seraphina, but I put honey on it, and so I knocked out. I was able to accomplish both prompts for both shows in this one
piece.
Well,
I've always said this about your work. You're a very prolific writer, and it seems as if your words do flow like honey, in a sense that you're always able, based on the past year of us working together, being able to just bring these words out of you. I mean, how do you continue that magic, that flow? I mean, it's incredible to me.
It is. I have to admit, it is my gift, and it's something I just enjoy doing. I mean, I enjoy the challenge, you know, of I mean, would somebody give me, if you give me a prompt on anything, and it's right about a dead fly, I'm going to look at that situation and I'm going to try to flip it and just go not from out of the box, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be different, you know, just try to, well, how can I do this, you know, like this if the prompt is a dead fly? And most readers look at it, they might actually write about a dead fly. When I see that, I'm looking at, okay, now what can I do to make this not so obvious or make it different? You know what I'm saying? So that challenged me, you know, I enjoy words, it is my gift. It's something I really truly enjoy doing. I mean, when I was putting that piece together, when I was writing, the process of writing that, you know, whenever I'm writing anything, I'd be so like, oh, okay, wow. Sometimes I don't even be knowing how it's going to go or how it's going to end up. Sometimes I don't even know how it's going to begin. But once I get that, that's the most difficult part of me is writing this, is starting.
Okay.
Where I'm going. But once I find where I'm going, it's a straight ticket.
Well, what if you don't know where you're going until you, I was going to say halfway through.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes, and what you just said, it may be, I may be into the piece, but what I'm doing then, at that point, I'm just jotting down lines. Like, I'm okay, for instance, a title. You may have a title, right about October Moon. Okay, so I just write that down, October Moon, and then I'm thinking, and some stuff might come to me. It's like a puzzle then. I'm just putting, okay, I like this line, so I may write it to the side, not in the body of it. And then once I get started.
All right.
And I get a feel, but I can get in the middle of the piece and it take a whole nother turn.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I'm like, oh, okay, I can, man, snap. I may hear something else another day because I may put it down. If I, once I get where I want to go, it's no problem. It's to getting there. It's to be, you know, whatever. And sometimes it come quick. Sometimes I just have to leave it alone, and pick it up all together at a whole nother time. And then I'm like, okay, because, I mean, I tell you, one piece I wrote, Had I Known, on a piece of paper, and that's all I wrote. And I end up using that for my best friend's mother had passed. And I had wrote that title, Had I Known, I just wrote it. I didn't know where that's going to be, what it's about. I wrote about three years before she even died. And when she passed, they asked me would I speak at her, because me and her was real good friends. He asked me would I speak at his mother's funeral. And I picked up my notebook and I saw that. I said, oh, that's it. That's what this was for, Had I Known. Because it was, had I known that she was, that was the last time we was going to talk and see each other, you know. And I saw it right there immediately. I started writing because I already knew where I wanted to go.
Right. You know, Marge Piercy made the statement that as a writer, she said that she entrusts her life's work to language. It is her tool, and as with any tool, she states you have to be constantly aware where it fails you and where you fail it. So again, constantly aware of where it fails you and where you fail it. What do you think about that?
So that's a very prolific observation, because, you know, and there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of truth to it. I mean, I think with writing, it is so easy to get caught up in the, I don't know, I'm going to call it housekeeping, whatever that is, that you forget about the art part of it. Now, the housekeeping could be the structure, the poetic devices, you name it, but you forget about the heart, the core of what the piece is all about. You know, I had a conversation with a young person today, and she made the statement that she'd heard someone say that poetry chooses you. You don't choose poetry if you're a poet, as a writer. that poetry chooses you. You don't choose it. And that really hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, wow, I never thought about it that way. Because why choose poetry as a vehicle for self-expression over something else? You know?
Right, it's a very unique art form, and it comes to different poets in different ways. You know, I don't think it's one way for any poet. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's unique. It's such a unique art form that it is to the individual, because you know, I've never had a creative writing class in my life, and I can see how some of the first pieces that I ever wrote when I first started writing, I can see how I have advanced in writing just from writing alone and being exposed to other people's. You know, I was in this poet. That's one of the main things that influenced took my writing to another level when I was in this poet group that we had started, and we were daily had ciphers that we would just put out a topic, and we had to just write up a top of a freestyle, so to speak. All and right. That right there, one of the best tools that helped me. So my experience in creative writing has just been my experience with other this show, with other coming in contact with other poets. Doing open mic, you know, for the first time. I can see how I have evolved from when I first started to now. And
well, I mean, I can see a
so
change
much
in
more.
Your work too. I can see a change in your work too from the time that we've been working together over the course of the past year. You know, just listening to you. Like I said, again, you're taking more risk. You're trying more different kinds of things. I mean, I think that's fantastic. And I think that's great. I think that's what's important, that you've got to learn how, including myself, to take risks. So that's why, you know, I tried to find clips today for the show tonight that were more experimental in terms of what poetry is. And I want to just kind of go to one right now. It's called I Project Poetry in Metaphor. And it's by a group called Hinterland and Andy Ranson. Let's see how this goes. Now, I'm sure there are many people out there in listening land who potentially would not view that as being poetry. What's poetry?
Well, that's really something what we just said earlier, that how poetry is to different to the individual.
Right.
You know,
true.
To them, to whoever wrote that, you know, that them two people, but to somebody else it may not even been, because they couldn't grasp the interpretation of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To fit what they felt was poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I would like to read that piece, read it without the music, just read it and see it, because to get it. I heard it, I listened to it, but that particular, because it was so different and so new to me, I would need to read it in order to grasp what, because it was so much going on for us, the music and that, you know.
It makes you wonder.
I would have to read it or hear it several times in order to get a grasp the author's intent. And
right.
I didn't immediately get it.
All right. And I think that's what's important, whether you get it or not, that the person is allowed to do it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't have to agree with it. I mean, when I listened to it the first time, there were things that I didn't hear in it that I heard that I didn't hear in it this time, and there's some things that I heard this time that I didn't hear it in the first time. You know, so I mean, it could depend on your mood, where you are in the middle of your day, in your evening, in your life, in your universe. You know, where are you in terms of listening to someone's work? And you're right. There are times when you do need to read it, too, to be able to grasp it. You know, because you're right. There were a lot of different things going on in that piece, a lot of different things. And
you said it so true, though, but because I didn't get it, or you didn't, that don't make it not poetry.
I agree with that.
Because it's once again, to go back, it's a uniqueness. That's what I like about poetry. It's a uniqueness to the individual, and you don't have to get it, because it is an expression. It's just how, to me, it's a bottom line. It's expression, and how you express yourself is totally different from how I express me.
Right.
And it took me a minute to learn that.
Oh yeah, me too. So look, we're gonna take a little station break here. We'll be right back. This is the Power of Poetics. I'm here with our main man, Mr. Kerry Wingdog Malone. So again, we'll be back in about 25 to 30 seconds. Here we go. At the title of that piece, I Project in Metaphor. And let's look at that, just so I project, these two artists project in metaphor in terms of their way of looking at the world. How do you think you project? What do you project in, if anything? And I'm going to try to do the same thing, to think, how do I project? What do I project through my poetry? They project through metaphor. You could project through metaphor too. But I'm just
That's a very good question. Very good question, and I think it really depends on the piece I'm writing or what I'm writing for, the purpose I'm writing.
All right.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does.
You know, because like I said, I wrote that piece of Hot Mess, and I project that as a sensual erotic. You know, I had a purpose for writing that.
Right.
And so the metaphor, a hot mess, it served two purposes. You know, I wanted to be, you know, I was the sexual act itself, but also the relevance to the different fires, you know, the reference to the fires, the metaphors of the fires and the hotness. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right.
So I had two objectives to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it depends on what I'm writing about and what I'm writing for. You know what I'm saying? The purpose. So it just depends on
I do understand. I think my writing has been the same way. It just depends on what's needed at that particular time for whatever program. And what I'm learning how to do, and it's taken me a very long time to do this, is to learn how to write for me, Michael, as opposed to writing for Michael as, let's say, a professor or a speaker or something like that for an audience. I have to learn how to write more intimate stuff for me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
It's not always for others. Sometimes it got to be for me, you know. And I want to
right.
share a piece here, you know, by a young lady who talks about her truth. And it's called White Roses. And her name is Tresee Powers.
You were more beautiful than a white rose, because you bloomed every time you laughed. You loved to bake bloodlines in the bottoms of our bellies, so you cooked often. Chitlins, collard greens, black-eyed peas. Your German chocolate cake is my favorite to this day, Grandma. You cooked as if you understood that soul food has nothing to do with the color of your skin. See, your skin was vanilla, but your soul was cocoa. My blonde hair, blue-eyed reminder of Jim Crow family values you. Were a rose cultivated in a Midwest garden rooted in German heritage and Holocaust history. But your childhood was fertilized by prejudice, you see. Great-granddaddy couldn't love a daughter who loved niggers, so he quickly clipped you from his family tree. So because of him, I hate being called things like light skin, high yellow, red bone, or any other color-coded connotation of a complexion that is evidence of Indian, African, and German blends. See, these are labels and markings of great-grandparents who would spit on me faster than a grand dragon if they saw me in the street. And I remember visiting you in the nursing home. It smelled of dying love and forgotten family ties, but I didn't mind the smell. It was the sight of your fading smile I didn't understand. My very own Anne Frank, you hid in an attic of strength and stubbornness. You hid your war with cancer well, so when Big Tobacco gave you gas chamber lungs for Christmas, I watched ICUs turn concentration camps as you were treated according to the strength of your insurance policy. When we argued outside with doctors just trying to prove we were your family, I never concentrated on things like that till now. Now that you've come and you've gone. See, I was a freshman in college when you died. Learning how a young girl blooms into a woman pollinated by infidelity like you, I lived wildly. So when my mother planted a family of white roses in the front yard, they seemed such an appropriate choice because you were our white rose. A reminder that even the most delicate of beauties need sharp edges to survive. But no one had a stronger will than you to survive. So when the cancer made your hair shed like wilting petals and the chemo faded your sour sickness into vanilla scents, I promised never to forget you. Never to forget your laugh, your cooking, your smile, or the fact that you loved earth-flavored men and birthed sand-colored children because you knew families needed strong foundations. So before I birthed my own family, on my wedding day, I will carry a bouquet of white roses with the roots and dirt still dangling, so I never forget that even the whitest of roses have brown roots.
Wow.
Isn't that powerful?
Wow.
She smiles with her eyes, kindly, the way teachers do their first year at war before they...
I don't know what happened there. That was a very powerful piece of poetry, man. She put
it
all
was.
Out there.
Yeah, I like that line about the attic. That you hid in your own attic, and you know, and that was like wow, okay, that was. But that whole piece, and then she said, "In I think she said she would wear a bouquet of white roses with roots of what, or something."
Because the roots are brown. The roses may be white.
But the roots are still, that was a very powerful piece, you know. And I mean, wow.
Well, it kind of goes back where maybe that particular piece is easier to relate to because it doesn't have that music going on, you know what I'm saying? So what would make that poetry and the other piece not poetry? You know, there's really no separation between the two because they're both about self-expression.
It's like you just said, it's expression. Matter of fact, can I share this piece? And I'm going to share this piece without giving the title first. You know, and it's a very short piece. I want you to tell me what you think it the title is or was or whatever, what I'm talking about.
All right.
veins that won't bleed, eyes that won't cry, rivers that won't fall, a mind that can't think, constructed passages, like a pen with no ink, no blood, no tears, no water, no words, no flow, no life, empty, the premature death of a poet. That's it.
Read it one more time, please, sir.
Veins that won't bleed, eyes that won't cry, rivers that won't fall, a mind that can't think, constructed passages, like a pen with no ink, no blood, no tears, no water, no words, no flow, no life, empty, the premature death of a poet.
I mean, it could mean so many different things.
Exactly.
I guess where I...
It's interpretation, ain't it? It's all about interpretation, ain't it?
Right. Because, see, now I was thinking, and I'm sure this may not have been where you were going, but I was thinking about young African-American males feeling as if there's no hope, no chance for success, feeling as if their lives are, for whatever reason, have already dried up, and not feeling as if they could potentially pick up a pen and be a poet. See, it could be that, you know.
Right. Exactly. And you know, and that's a lot of, that's how why titles, to me, of pieces are so important also.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can define. But you know what the name of that piece is, what I was talking about?
No. What is it?
Writer's Block.
Writer's Block.
Now that you know the title, let me read it again, now that you know the title.
All right.
Writer's Block. Veins that won't bleed. Eyes that won't cry. Rivers that won't fall. A mind that can't think. Constructed passages. Like a pen with no ink. No blood, no tears, no water, no words, no flow, no life. Empty. The premature death of a poet. It's writer's block.
Writer's
I just didn't
block.
Say it, but that's what I was. You see what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And I can also see how you can relate to what you was talking about. It could very well. I could have just named this piece the death of our youth or something like
definitely.
That. You know what I'm saying? Because it could have very well related to.
Yep,
I
was, it could have been. It could have been called also the death of the new Langston. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Let's say.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly. So
like, same thing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's what I like is the beauty of poetry. It's the interpretation up to the person and then the people. I can write from one perspective, and I can read it, and somebody else can take that and take a whole nother. On the same, you know, piece.
Oh, very much so. And that person could be sitting right beside you in that room at that time and view it as being something totally, totally different.
Like you just said, because I never looked at it. And what you said, what it was about young men, that's powerful because now I can see them veins that won't bleed. I can see them as
right.
being eyes. I can see them as being rivers that won't fall. You know what I'm saying? I can see all of that when you said that. And it just gave the whole poem a whole different meaning.
Right, very much so. You know, and that's because that's where I was in my mind at that time, thinking about the fact that the Million Man March was here this past weekend, and just some of the conversations and situations that I had around that. You know, so just thinking about that put me there as I listened to that piece.
Oh.
Wow. Poetry. Poetry used for so many different things. So many different things. Listen to a piece by Nikki Giovanni. It's called In the Spirit of Martin.
This is a sacred poem. Blood has been shed to consecrate it. Wash your hands, remove your shoes, bow your head. I have a dream. That was a magical time. Hi-ho, silver away. Oh, Cisco, oh, Pancho. Here I come to save the day. I want the world to see what they did to my boy. No, 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 I'm not going to move. If we are wrong, then the Constitution of the United States is wrong. Montgomery, Birmingham, Selma, four little girls, constant threats, constant harassment, constant fear. SCLC, Ralph and Martin, Father Knows Best, Leave It to Beaver, Ed Sullivan. How long? Not long. But what, Mr. Thoreau said to Mr. Emerson, are you doing out? This is a letter from Birmingham City Jail. This is a eulogy for Albany. This is a water hose for Anniston. This is a thank you to Diane Nash. This is a flag for James Farmer. This is a how can I make it without you to Ella Baker. This is for the red clay of Georgia, yielded men of courage, black men of vision, black men of hopes, bent over cotton or sweet potatoes or pool tables and baseball diamonds, playing for a chance to live free and breathe easy and have enough money to take care of the folk they love. This is why we can't wait. That swirling Mississippi wind, the Alabama pine, that Tennessee dust defiling the clothes the women washed, those hot winds the lemonade couldn't cool, that let the women know we too must overcome. This is for Fannie Lou Hamer, Joanne Robinson, Septima Clark, Daisy Bates, all the women who said, baby, 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 I know you didn't mean to lose your job. I know you didn't mean to gamble the rent money. I know you didn't mean to hit me. I know the Lord is going to make a way. I know I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. How much pressure does earth exert on carbon to make a diamond? How long does the soil push against the flesh, molding, molding, molding the moan that becomes a cry that bursts forth crystalline, unbreakable, priceless, incomparable Martin? I made my vow to the Lord that I never would turn back. How much pressure do the sins of the world press against the heart of a man who becomes the voice of his people? He should have had a tattoo, you know, Freedom Now or something like that. Should have braided his hair, carried his pool cue in a mahogany case, wafted that wonderful laugh over a plate of skillet fried chicken, drop biscuits, dandelion greens on the side. This is a sacred poem. Open your arms, turn your palms up, feel the greatness, and be redeemed.
Nikki Giovanni, in the spirit of Mark. Now, let me ask you a question, my friend. Would young people understand that particular piece versus this?
My crib, my car, my fancy things, my
whack-ass bling,
my Bentley, my Porsche, my accumulated scratch, my Range Rover, boom, boom. Gimme my champagne, my
fashion designer clothes,
Gucci this, Fendi that,
woo! Gimme that,
my Louis V sweaters with the hat to match,
my Boeing jet, my
paradise life,
my yacht got a triple deck,
woo!
My clothes, my tools, my money in the bank,
Bill Gates, Donald Trump, let me in,
my money,
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 my cash, my
dough,
my riches,
cheddar,
bread,
dollars,
my gold, my
diamond rolls,
Beamer,
Lexus,
my
chromed out semis, $2,000 and pop,
this is why, this is why, this is why I'm hot.
My pool, my
VIP,
my
wood decorated on chrome,
candy coated Chevy,
my
fine wine Bacardi,
Ben Frankie,
big money,
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 top dollars,
cheddar,
money,
money,
money, and a white man get paid off for all of that.
All right, that's Isabel Knowles, Get Rich or Die Trying.
They would definitely relate to the second one, but some of them just, but it's only because it'd be. More of the terminology was more, they were relatable. They could, you know, they was more relatable now to them.
Right.
You know, they hear it more, you know, more. The pieces in Nikki Giovanni piece, they could relate to, but they have to be educated on it because they couldn't, they wouldn't either understand who was the famous, who some of those names were.
Some of those names.
It was more of an educational piece. So they would relate to that rap piece because it touched the heart of where they're at and that's, or where they are at now in the world they are.
Mm-hmm. And I think, for me, as I'm thinking about it now, they could potentially relate with both pieces to the musicality of both. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I agree with that. Exactly. Yeah, but their mind have to be in a different place.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, for the first piece, they immediately can grasp that the second piece. They immediately.
Oh, yeah.
But they have to be in an educational environment type to grasp the first piece. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, it's funny today, man. You can pursue a master's degree in hip hop poetry.
Yes, and it's so, and also. It's major universities that break down, like Tupac's. The class and study Tupac's writings,
mm-hmm.
his raps and his
mm-hmm.
poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you know it's this poetry thing is bigger than we ever know. Can I read you this piece?
Yes, of course. You know, it's funny. You seem to really be on fire tonight. What's going on?
What do you mean?
Fire in a positive way. You know, that you really, you know, energized.
I mean, I'm inspired by intelligent conversation. You know, this, I could do this all night.
Yeah, I could tell.
I like the challenge. And I'm intellectual, debatable conversation, that's right up my alley. So, I mean, that's what it is. It's the conversation. It's you. Oh, the whole concept of your show, whatever. I don't know if you intended for this, but whatever, you know. It's I like history. I like talking about our history, you know, just history in general, but specifically our history from now to back then. You just struck a chord, that's all.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm glad you're here. Well, please, share your piece.
And this piece is called Watermelon and Fried Chicken. This is part two of it. I got part one, but I'm going to read part two of it, because this is a little shorter. And it's called Watermelon and Fried Chicken. James Crow, Jr., I'm going to warn my brothers about your type and your stereotypes. Black men, beware. A darkness hoover over America like a liver, black, infested with cancer. Labored, endangered, and stereotyped, lazy, angry, and harsh. Ignorance got us. Misunderstood, underrepresented in position of power, undergraduate schools and courthouse, except child support cases. And overpopulated jails, prisons, and juvenile cases. Multiple felons got brothers' hands tied like shoelaces. Black men, beware. Epidemic is spreading faster than the wind, than the wildfire blowing like the Santa Ana winds. It's called injustice, and none of us are immune. Any given moment, any one of us can become a victim. Stereotype. At home chilling or hanging with your brother, it don't matter. A night out with the boys, coming from the game or a bachelor party, Sean Bell. It don't matter. On a date with wife in the park with your girl, returning to your crib after coming from the store, Trayvon. Walking in your own neighborhood, it don't matter. Whether you strap, pack it or not, proper ID or not, wearing a white beater, hoodie or suit or not, it don't matter. High, yellow, light skin, chocolate or dark skin, it don't matter. They said we all the same, whether you're minding your own business. So brothers, beware, in an instant you could be stereotyped and racially profiled. Just like it was said, that we all look alike and we all love watermelon and fried chicken. Now, fuck you, James Crow, Jr.
Well, you know, in terms of stereotypes.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for it, man. because we have to be ourselves. And whether they're going to be stereotyping or not, you still got to be strong in terms of who you are, in terms of your convictions as a person, in terms of your own integrity about who you are. That's what's critical. It's your core. And that's what I heard in that piece, you know, that no matter who you are,
right,
you're going to be challenged. And we
right.
know anybody
that's
confident.
You might have... You got your college degree, wherever you have arrived, whatever, you might be the kingpin of a major, whatever, the drug ring, or you just may be just the struggling young man at McDonald's, whatever, the middle class, no matter where you are, any given moment, because of stereotypes, your life can change. And like you said, you need to be walk in who you are at all times. Be aware of who you are and walk in who you are at all times.
And, you know, that can be a struggle in itself. That's not always easy.
No.
There's so many things that can get in the way that can hinder you from feeling as if you can walk in your own integrity. But it's important to try to do it anyway.
Right. Well, but once again, just mind, like the piece said, you can just be minding your own business. This is just the way you dress. It ain't got nothing to do with stereotype. Like you say, you're a doctor. You got a PhD. You could go to the store and it's a, you know, just hey, you want to wear some jogging pants and a wife beater, and can be stereotype. You know, just mind. It's like you just said. Be conscious of who you are, because it don't discriminate. I mean, it don't. You know, it. Don't discriminate, whether whatever, we all the same.
Wow. Take a little break. We'll be right back. But I'd like to say hello to our good friend Kofi. I know he's on the line. I won't bring him in terms of saying hello to him personally. I know he's out there traveling, but Kofi, thank you for tuning in like you always do. So again, just know that I see you out there, and thanks for being on the show. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Power of Poetics. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. And we're just sharing tonight, just as we do every week, just putting it out there, just putting it out there. Again, the call-in number is 646-716-8754. What I'd like to do is to play something that's kind of strange, kind of funky, and it's called Talking in Your Sleep by Sybil Khalees. Is an image.
Yes.
And from that image, to be able to create words, I mean, I have an idea for a project that the DC Poetry Project may attempt to put on in 2016, and it's not so much that it came to me from talking in my sleep, it came to me in a dream, and I felt it was important for me to put it down on paper. So you never know where your inspiration is going to come from. Well, you know where it always comes from a universal global perspective, but you never know when you're going to hear a word. Just like you said earlier about a dead bug. And I was like, wow, that would be a great prompt.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, just the word dead book. Yes.
Right. Michael, next week, can you try to, it's called A Black American by Smokey Robinson. Pull it up. Or either if you don't put it on your show, you listen to this.
Okay. Okay.
It's a poetry piece by Smokey Robinson. And you can go to YouTube and get it. Find it. It's Black American, and I think it's Smokey Robinson saying he ain't African American but American. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
But man, this is such a powerful piece.
Well, what I'll do next week is see if I can find it. What I try to do is to find pieces that there are no copyright restrictions to them. So
right,
what I'll do is check
right.
it out. But I can't play it on the air. I'll check it out, and you and I can talk about it separately.
Right. It's from the clips that I'm looking at it right now. It's off of Deaf Poetry Jam.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's A Black American by Smokey Robinson, and then and he's got one Smokey Robinson saying he ain't African American but American. But you got to hear that piece, man. You got to listen to it. That's a powerful poem. Very powerful.
Well, let me ask this question, my friend. We've got about 3 minutes. Do you have one that you could bring us home with? Or we could play something? Or we could just talk?
Just give me one. Hold on.
Okay, then. While you do that, then I'll take us to one little break here, and we'll come right back. No, I know what I'll do. I'll bring Kofi in and talk with him. Kofi, good evening. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm doing good, sir. How are you all doing?
I'm doing well. I said I wasn't going to bother you tonight, but I couldn't do that. So how's life for you, my friend?
Thank you again for another wonderful
interview. I don't know if nobody else tunes in other than our people in Afghanistan and those two fans we have in Mongolia. I know that you will be with us.
You're feeding the soul, so we appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you for honesty.
Well, hey, thank you for just being so faithful. I'll let you go, but I just wanted to say hello. All right?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take Kofi off the air.
Hello.
You ready? You got a piece?
Yes. This piece is called Guns N' Roses, and this is in light of tribute to domestic violence. October is Domestic Violence Month also.
All right.
In the lily of the valley, rebellious young guns, 38 hot, mishandling and mentally rearranging precious innocent roses. Reproducing bright sunflower seeds that never grow up to shine. Tender tulips too little, too late, premature, or still born in fast-moving times. Cradles become makeshift coffins, making once purple hearts fade black. Determined to be strong as steel magnolias, outside only the tiger lilies and the elephant ears hears. The teardrops falling from mourning mums and weeping willows for their offsprings. Sitting in the maple shade, battered and bruised, a rose named Sharon wears a bulletproof vest to protect her bleeding heart from a live-in predator wearing a Glock and a smile. Dressed to the nine, a cat with nine lives and all of them abusive, just as destructive as a loaded 9mm. He's abusive spiritually, mentally, verbally, physically, emotionally, financially, sexually, deliberately, and dangerously unapologetic. The flower in this bed stayed tinted with bloodstains, thought to be loving with a child, but really was infatuated in bondage. When violence stormed into the life of sweet Violet, the ship became volatile as the relations soured. Yet out of fear of leaving and building a paper bridge over turbulent water, 22-year-old Pistol Pete pistol whipped Violet, all because her newborn Daisy wouldn't stop crying. Picking inside a double-wide down the double barrel of a dark shotgun, Buckshot Ivy blackened Iris's irises in a fit of jealous rage. for looking at their neighbor, a handsome dandelion. Looking like black-eyed Susan, she continued to suffer along with poison ivy. In hostile, hostile, kidnapping, stole a marigold, divorce, a court order restraint could not restrain the bullet from the chamber of a cold remnant steel. Justice locked up Petunia when she shot and killed her husband for sleeping with creeping Myrtle, then buried him under dogwood in a shallow grave covered with half-dead pansy and posies, which sums up this poem to mean, love don't play with guns, and love certainly don't abuse roses. Wow. Let's stop domestic abuse. Rest in peace, my cousin Tammy.
Beautiful. Well, on that note, we've come to a conclusion of another episode of the DC Poetry Project's Paul Poetics. I want to thank all of you out there listening. I want to thank our guests, as usual, Gary, incredible, Kofi, incredible, and just having the dialogue. And, again, have a peaceful week, and we'll be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Take care, Mike. God bless you.
God bless you.